What's up, Packers fans? Welcome back to Nagler's Never Right here at PackersNews.com. Aaron Nagler with you for yet another week. We are exactly 4 weeks away from the draft as I record this. 4 weeks of lying season, of misdirection, of people telling you stuff they don't really mean. It's great. It's a great time of year in the NFL calendar. Obviously, the league meetings have wrapped up now. Our intrepid reporters, Michael Cohen and Pete Doherty, made their way back to Green Bay. I am in New York City. Hope you've been catching all their great coverage from down in Orlando. Tough gig, being flown down and hanging out in Orlando. I'm holding down the fort here in New York, though. Something that obviously making a lot of headlines coming out of this week is the number of rule changes that were either implemented or talked about, set in motion, so to speak. Mark Murphy, president and CEO of the Packers, coming out and saying that there's a good chance the kickoff, as we know it, could be on the way out the door unless an effort is made to make it much, much safer of a play. What that might be, I'm not quite sure, but I think the writing's on the wall there. It has been for some time. I don't think there's any doubt we're going to see the kickoff go away in the next 2 or 3 years. Because there's very little they can do to make that a safer play outside of, you know, eliminating it. So in and of itself, getting rid of the kickoff, I don't think it's a big deal other than one very specific point, and that would be the onside kick. You know, the strategy at the end of a game when you are down two scores and you've got to score and get the ball back, I don't know how they would get around that possibility or that, you know, opportunity for a team to get the ball back and have two possessions in a row, which is something that obviously adds a great deal of excitement, a great deal of intrigue into the ends of games where teams have seemingly been out of it and then crawl their way back into it. We've seen a number of surprise onsides over the tenure of Mike McCarthy that have worked really well and, quote-unquote, stolen a possession for McCarthy's teams. Now, you know, are any of those concerns, do they even begin to approach the balancing out of the issue of player safety? Of course not. And that's why I'm pretty sure that whatever attempts may be made to kind of save the kickoff as a play, I'm pretty sure that that's whatever anyone comes up with will probably fall short, especially given the statistic that Murphy cited saying that the kickoff play in and of itself, you know, players are five times more likely to suffer a concussion on that particular play, you know, as a, you know, compared to a play from scrimmage on the offensive or defensive sides of the ball. So, you know, I think the writing's on the wall there. The other rule change that has obviously garnered very intense interest is the lowering of the head penalty. And a lot was made a couple days ago. I'm recording this on Thursday afternoon. I believe the first kind of wave of news about it came out on Tuesday. And, you know, obviously, immediate reactions are always kind of knee-jerk, and you don't really have all of the information. It's hard to see how it's, as it's written, how they're going to implement it. And I think that's what a lot of people are concerned about. I don't think obviously the idea behind it, keeping players safe, trying to eliminate using the helmet as a weapon, obviously that effort is to be applauded, and it makes sense. And it's about time they got some kind of mechanism into the officials' hands and, you know, the league's hands to get rid of bad actors. I don't think there's any question that people want that. Now, that said, again, it's the way it's written and the way it's worded, it's just hard to see how it's implemented without it being a tool for referees, bad officials taking advantage of a rule to get a guy out of the game that he doesn't, you know, that he has bad beef with. all it's open to a lot of interpretation. And this is, you know, how it reads, quote, "It is a foul if a player lowers his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. The player may be disqualified. Applies to any player anywhere on the field. The player may be disqualified." Applies to any player anywhere on the field. You remember a couple years ago, this is actually an expansion of this rule. A couple years ago, they were supposedly going to outlaw, or they didn't supposedly, they did by the book, but it just is never called. Running backs outside the pocket are not supposed to be allowed to lower their head and use their helmet as a weapon, so to speak, a shield, but get low and ram a defensive player. Of course, that never gets called. I think I've seen it called twice since it was implemented. It may have been called more times than that, but, you know, with the expansion of this rule and making it so that any player lowering his head is now all of a sudden automatically open to being disqualified, gosh, there's a lot going on there. And I know, you know, obviously they came out on Wednesday afternoon and said that this is something they'll be working on between now and the next league meetings in May, for good reason, because there's a lot to work on. But one of the things that they're going to have to do, and they've obviously indicated that there will be some kind of mechanism where whoever the official is will be working in conjunction with New York off of video before a disqualification or rejection takes place. And that is an absolute must, because the last thing they need, and look, college football has implemented their targeting rule, and I don't disagree that, I know I've gotten pushback on Twitter when I lament the college targeting rule, and you know, people say the officials in college have gotten better. And that may be true, and I think that is true, but you still see egregious examples of guys going 1,000 miles an hour and having a split-second play where they have to kind of position their body at the last second, in a split second, in a reaction to something the offensive player has done, and by no fault of their own, they are put into a bad position, and they get ejected. It's becoming more and more impossible to play defense in the game of football, especially in the NFL, where everything is geared towards the offense scoring points. You know, defenders, they have a finite area that they're allowed to hit. And people, this is the other thing you always get kind of in arguments with people when it comes to playing defense and the rules. And, well, you know, defenders lament that you can't go high and you can't go low. Well, there's the whole torso. That's what people on Twitter always say. People on Twitter on their couches or their desks, you know, talking about guys running 4.4 40s as fast as, you know, they can across the field to hit a moving target. Or even worse, the guy who's jumping, leaping in the air to try and, you know, catch a football. But God forbid you miscalculate your split-second decision to, you know, launch yourself at a guy to try and dislodge the football. If you're a little too high, there's a flag. If you're a little too low, it's a flag. But he's got the whole torso. Yeah, the whole torso, which is moving, like if you blink your eye and it's a totally different spot. It's not like duck hunt, man. You're not out there like lining it up and pulling the trigger. So yeah, that's a bit tangential, but it's just, I'm going to be interested to see how they go about implementing the rule, how they go about officiating it. And that's the other thing. Just the officiating of it is going to be a mess. It's just, I know it is. You can't look at me with a straight face and say that the NFL, the National Football League, is going to all of the sudden become this bastion of consistency when it comes to officiating this rule. This is a league that has proven beyond the shadow of a doubt over the last 5-6 years that their officials are too overburdened. The nomenclature is ridiculous. There are too many variables in almost all their rules. And every week, seemingly, we get some kind of ridiculous adjudication of a rule that has been over-lawyered, over-parsed, and still just, you know, the idea was to take away subjectivity, but all it does is open up smaller avenues for officials to be subjective. And it's plagued the NFL for the last, you know, 5-6 years, where the officiating has gotten so bad, and there are so many, you spend half the time in these games, you know, lamenting like timeouts and conferences with all these officials huddled together because, you know, they're all so petrified to make a mistake, and they've all got to like, oh, I saw this and I saw this and I saw that and blah, blah, blah. We've got to get every nuance cracked down on. And meanwhile, you're just flipping the channel or you're getting up and going to get something from the refrigerator because, good Lord, it's like being privy to a courtroom where you don't have sound. I mean, talk about watching paint dry. There's nothing compelling or exciting about that. So, yeah, that's my old axe to grind with the officiating in the NFL. That's just me. But, yeah, we'll see how they go about implementing it. And I'm sure this won't be the only time we talk about it here on the old podcast. Looking towards the draft, like I said earlier, we've got 4 weeks to go. I got a great email from a reader slash listener slash viewer. His name is Chris Carey. And I thought he brought up a great point after he sent me an email in response to something I said on Facebook Live about the Packers having 12 draft picks. And how I said I found it highly unlikely that they execute all 12 picks. I would be surprised if they didn't end up trading either up or down. And I was talking, you know, specifically about using that capital to move up and down the board this season. But I thought Chris brought up something very interesting, and I'm not gonna paraphrase it because I would murder it, but I will read it to you because I love it when my listeners do the work for me. Here's what Chris had to say. He says, "You stated you didn't think the Packers will execute all 12 picks. I agree. It seems excessive, difficult to keep that many rookies on the roster, and wasteful to waive them and watch them get picked up by other teams. The practice squad only goes so far. Here's an alternative which seems compelling to me in my ignorance." You're not ignorant, Chris. Not at all. "Look for opportunities to trade a pick or three this year for picks next year. The typical value of moving up a round in the next year is a decent-sized gain. One round, turning fives into fours and fours into threes is a good return. I swear the Patriots were doing this to great benefit for a while." And what's funny, Chris, as soon as you wrote that, I was going to respond with, this is exactly what the Patriots were doing back when I used to go to the draft in Radio City when it was still here in New York. You are absolutely correct. There was a run of years there where they were like 3 or 4 years in a row where they were turning around picks in whatever draft we were currently in and turning them into, you know, trying to get basically jump up around the following year. They did do that. "The Packers' free agent losses this year combined with their gains mean their comp picks next year are going to be small to none. Their draft class next year looks to be 7 picks. Trading for next year's picks would smooth out their riches in this year's draft over 2 years, which could make future cap ramifications easier to deal with. Similarly, smoothing out the incoming talent over 2 years means it's less likely they'll lose players in the 45 to 60 range to other teams. Large draft classes, if successful, also carry the problem that all the contracts come due at the same time. Spreading that out helps long-term cap management." Chris, I agree with almost everything you wrote there. That last point, you're right in theory, but how rare is it when you get more than 3 or 4 guys who make it to the end of that rookie contract? Now, could you have a bevy of guys who, you out of 12 picks, you end up with 7 or 8 who you're having to deal with there at the end of their rookie deals, 4, maybe 5 years down the road? Yeah. I suppose that is a possibility, but, you know, I haven't seen Gutekunst's draft yet. I don't know what his acumen will be as a drafter, but the likelihood that would be a nice problem to have, I think, for the Packers. But that said, I think your overarching point is a good one. It really depends on how Gutekunst and company feel when players are on the board and what their grades are, you know, and obviously we're trying to fit some need in there, but they also want to collect talent. But I think the idea is a good one as far as spreading it out over a couple of years. And I can already hear a couple people gnashing their teeth and saying, well, they need all the help they can get this year. You're wasting Aaron Rodgers' prime, blah, 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 blah. But I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think it's a smart idea if they can find a dance partner. You know, obviously each one of those scenarios is dependent upon finding a team willing to make that trade. But, you know, Gutekunst, it's his gig now, and he has to look out for the long-term well-being of the franchise. And if he's operating on a 3 to 5 year plan, it makes a lot of sense, especially when you're looking at it in terms of he's got to build his – he's got to take this house that Ted Thompson gave to him basically, or he took over from Ted Thompson, and he's got a bit of work to do. He's got some foundation to build back up. You know, there's been some erosion. There's been some kind of wear and tear, so to speak, on this roster from its – better days, let's say. And, you know, the best way to do that is through the draft, and the best way to do that is to invest in guys who you're going to have in your program 3 or 4 years. And I definitely think if you can take, you know, guys and picks, those picks for the first pick in the fourth round, first pick in the fifth round, and turn them into slightly higher picks next year, I think that's a smart way to go. Now, this day and age, instant results are expected. It's impossible to say how Gutekunst will feel about that idea. But I do think it is a smart way to look at it and a real possibility. But, you know, I've said it here before, and I've said it other places, Gutekunst has not been quite as ruthless as I thought he might be. Some people may kind of question that because of the Jordy Nelson decision. But I thought he could have been a lot more ruthless with the roster that he was handed from the get-go, and he's chosen very much to clearly kind of massage it a little bit. He hasn't done a whole lot, as far as we know, about approaching anyone for restructures or extensions, whether that's Clay Matthews, Randall Cobb, what have you. Clearly he tried, he offered a reduced salary to Jordy, pretty much knowing he wouldn't take it, but for the most part he's left the roster as is. And he brought in a couple free agents, and now will undoubtedly train his eye towards the draft. And I know he said down the owners' meetings this week, yeah, that's still the best way. It's still the way they're going to build their team. It's going to be the lifeblood of their organization, of their franchise, and that makes sense. You do wonder how anxious he will be to get an influx of talent this year, and how much he'll be looking down the road. How much you'll be looking at next year's draft class and seeing where the strengths lie, where the weaknesses may be. Even though, as much as we can sit here in 2018 and talk about the 2019 draft class, a lot of things change throughout the season. Injuries happen. Guys regress. We see it every season where guys we thought, you know, were the top of the class coming into the season end up kind of sliding to second, third round selections. But the idea is still being collecting talent and forming that base for Gutekunst's run as GM, and thinking in long-term planning, I think makes a lot of sense. And thanks a lot for the email, Chris. It's always nice to hear from folks who aren't telling me that I'm being mean by calling Packers fans saying they live in entitled town. I got in trouble for that this morning on Twitter. All right, that's a lot of jumping around there. That'll probably do it for today, but make sure you check out everything at PackersNews.com for the remainder of the week into next week. The draft stuff will start up pretty heavy now, leading up to whenever the Packers make their first selection, either at 14th overall, or maybe they drop down, maybe they surprise us all and jump up. That's why we watch. That's why the draft is so exciting. Can't wait. This month is going to be fun, looking at all the draft stuff. We'll have it all up at PackersNews.com, including anything and everything else that happens with the Green Bay Packers. So make sure you check it out. Talk to you guys soon. Have a great week. I'll talk to you next week here on Naglers Never Right.